Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Season is finally here, Rod. We are back. We are talking 49ers football here on the eve of their opening night, Monday night game against the Jets. And lots of things happen since we last recorded, which is kind of scary, the amount of things that happened, because a player was shot in San Francisco. And like, I, you know, it's one of those things where we're so thankful that Ricky Pearsall is seemingly doing well and maybe even better than anybody thought. They're talking about him playing again sooner than later. It's going to be one of those things where I'm just going to remember where I was when I heard it. And I'll tell you why. We had a scenario a couple months back, former President Trump, there was an assassination attempt on him. And I had this feeling at that moment where I was like, wow, like this is one of those moments that our parents were telling us about. JFK assassinated, Ronald Reagan assassination attempt, John Lennon assassination. And I was like, wow, this is one of those moments. And because of how the media works today, it was it 3 days later? Nobody even talked about it anymore?
It was a nothing burger. And, you know, and then there was the whole thing, like, was it a hoax? Or, you know, it was just, which is kind of, you know, I don't even know what word I want to use, but you know, the fact that Donald Trump like coined the phrase fake news now, you know, and then for it to be, you know, a lot of people saying that that was fake news. It was a really bizarre thing. Cause I mean, I don't really care for the guy, but I don't want him to get like,
no,
wasted. I mean, that's
and it's not even really him. Like, of course, you don't want anybody to get shot in that way. But what would that do to the tribalism that we see in politics?
Yeah,
it would actually light that thing on fire and blow it up. So the reason why I brought that up is because when I saw the Pearsall news, I felt the exact same way. Like, what in the hell is going on in this world? This stuff happens. This stuff happens in big cities. This stuff happens more that we hear just because of how media travels today with Twitter and all these things. This stuff was always happening. We just hear about it more. And I was just one of those moments where I was like, man, this is ridiculous. Like, what's going on? And then it was like an hour later, they're like, oh, yeah, it entered through his chest, left through his back, no organs. And then, oh, yeah, he walked to the, you know, to the ambulance. And then, oh, yeah, like, he left the next day and he was out of the hospital and was like, oh my God, like this is fantastic news. And it's, I don't want to trivialize what happened to him, but man, that was such great news coming out of it for such a, a scary story for when I first heard it.
Like, when I first heard it, it was like, of course, you know, what it says about me, I don't know, and society is like, this can't be real. And then once it was confirmed, like, I didn't know who that person was, who the tweet was, the name. I don't watch local, you know, local news like that to know that she was, like, legit. KGO legit.
Isn't it sad that when you see news that gets retweeted on social media, you immediately have to see who the author is, because you're like,
right.
Is this fake? Is this real? How many followers do they have? What news organization do they do? Are they from the Cleveland bloggers saying LeBron is going to lead? Like, you know, there's lots of that stuff. But I was with you. And then
it's legit. And then, like, I heard he got shot in the chest. I'm like, oh, no, that's horrible. You know, that, because I think that's something that has gotten trivialized. It's like, oh, he just got shot in the chest. There are 100 different ways that could have gone. What happened to him is like the outlier. Normally getting shot in the chest, there's just so much in there internally that it could just all go bad. So when I heard that, it was like, oh no, this is awful, you know, for this young man. I mean, not that what happened was awful, but I mean, I thought it was like a grave situation, but it was, you could just tell, like, in the reporting of it, that it was never that. It never seemed like anybody else thought it was as grave as I did. And it turns out it's because, like, there are people on the scene, they're seeing him walk to the ambulance. And so obviously everybody there knew that it wasn't nearly as, because if he was in grave condition, he wouldn't have got up and walked.
Yes. And of course, then when you know that he's fine, then you can, you know, you can joke a little bit. It probably took me, I don't know, maybe it was the next day when I started firing off the Tupac jokes.
It was the 50 Cent joke. But and, you know, and I guess for me, the one that would, I guess it speaks to our society, is like, once the Debo tweet hit, it's like, okay, well, it's cool, because clearly, it's like Debo is probably probably directly in contact with him.
Right.
So if he says everything is all good, then, you know, it probably is all good.
Yes, absolutely. So
Debo should have. Great, he should have been like a newsbreaker or something on that.
He's going live on IG. No, you know what? Debo's like, Debo probably thought about it, and he's like, nah, man. You know how much I had to beg for the contract that I have? They need to pay me more if they want me to be the newsbreaker. So that wasn't the only thing that happened, because very soon thereafter, we got the word that Trent Williams was back. He got the guaranteed money that he wanted. I believe it's $48 million. So just for people who don't know the scenario, it really wasn't about his average contract, his yearly average, that he was worried about. It was just that from his previous contract, all the guaranteed money that he made was expired. So he'd already made it. So what he wanted to do was front load an extension so that he would make guaranteed money. So essentially his contract would be guaranteed no matter if he got hurt, no matter, you know, whatever. So, you know, they're not going to be able to cut him. Like, let's say he broke his ankle and they thought that he was done, that, you know, so it's really protecting his, you know, his salary and his income for the NFL. So that's why he was holding out. It wasn't like the Ayuk scenario, which is, you know, you really want to take advantage of the wide receiver market. You don't want to go into the last year of your deal without a contract, because then also you could get hurt as well. So this was more about, I am one of the best players in football. Pay me guaranteed money for these next two seasons, and then we'll come back to the table in 2 years again. So
more along the lines of what they dealt with CMC earlier in the year.
Yes. And, you know, this is football, because in the NBA and in Major League Baseball, you for your star players, you don't have to worry about this because those guys get paid no matter what. But right. It is football, and part of the reason why the turnover in the NFL is so much is because of these injuries, and that's what the owners are protecting against. But if you're a player and you have some clout, you can protect against it on the other side as well. So
we're here now with the NFL that this is, you know, it's, I don't know that it'll ever be, you know, like fully guaranteed like the NBA and baseball, but this is as close in my lifetime as we've ever been to that, where these guys are getting huge money, you know, guaranteed up front at positions other than quarterback. So, I mean, this is a landmark time for us, you know, in this league. And it just goes to show the lands, how the money is affecting the landscape. You know, we talk about in that other sport, we're about to have, you know, $100 million a year player. Not in the not too distant future. So it's just a hell of a time to be alive. And the NFL has never experienced anything like it's experiencing now. The whole BA thing was something that players could only dream of, to be able to leverage a situation where he is under contract, but he's fielding, you know, contract offers from other teams, and it using it to affect the offer that he got with his. It is just I love it, but it is a different way of doing business than the NFL has ever seen.
I don't remember the which one. There are two. I think there have been two disagreements between the players and the owners over the last maybe 10-ish years. Because I remember the one was Harbaugh's first season, where Alex Smith was gathering the players and getting them into practice and stuff because the teams could not get together. So it may have been the next time the collective bargaining situation was going on. And I remember a quote from Drew Brees. And at this point, Drew Brees was one of the stars of the NFL. And I was just amazed at how little leverage that he believed that the players had, because they were still so much catering to the owners language-wise. And I imagine today that landscape is much different. We just saw Dak get paid today before the season started, $240 million for 4 years. I didn't see what the guarantees were on that.
I don't think they've released it yet, but yeah.
But so, you know, I think if they had to go back to the table, like you said, so much more money is coming in than ever before. And I do think the players have more leverage than they've ever had. In fact, I don't think that's got to be fact. And, you know, the thing about the NBA was the NBA was actually able to get to 50-50 of the revenue of the basketball related income. They were able to make it so that they got 50% of the split and the owners got 50% of the split. I don't think it's like that in football yet, but I could see a time and place when we do get to 50-50 in the NFL.
Absolutely. Because like you say, we're still not there yet, but in every one of those cases, baseball leading the way, and then the NBA, what changed is once everybody's money is guaranteed and you get guys being a little bit smarter with their money, they have a war chest that they, you know, they aren't like the NFL notoriously, those dudes can't miss games. That was always the owner's leverage, is, you know, push come to shove, you know, the quarterbacks could always, they were always going to be okay. They were a class that was like the baseball players, not just, you know, culturally, but financially. They could withstand missing time because they had guaranteed, their money was set. But your, you know, players 40 to, you know, 53, you know, if they don't play, they don't get paid. So, you know, that affects your vote when it comes time to, okay, are we going to hold a line or are we going to miss games? It affects that. But as money gets better and the league in the NFLPA is able to amass the kind of money that, you know, okay, we can do some things in terms of, you know, paying people while we do this. So it's going to be interesting to see as we move forward. And then there was always talk about how buddy Gene Upshaw was with tags. So that was an issue in terms of, I mean, it did well in terms of keeping peace, but you know, there was always this thing where are they necessarily pushing the hardest bargain that they could. But so it'll be interesting. I don't even know when the next labor contract is. I think we're in for a pretty long stretch of,
yeah, you know, I saw I think 2021 was the last time that they had an agreement, and it looks like the players are at 48.8%, so they are getting a lot closer to that 50 number. Yeah. All right, so let's talk about some of the things that we're looking forward to tomorrow in game one. I think you also have some prop stuff, over under stuff for us to chat mm-hmm. about. Before we get there, I just wanted to shout out our guy, third man in the booth, Shelvin, is on YouTube. What up, Shelvin? If anyone else is watching, I know there are some people watching, but if you want to be shouted out, then throw your name in the comments. We'll shout you out as well. And I wanted to mention that the website, bspnmedia.com, we're going to be doing a lot more writing on the website. We're going to be putting out more content because I am possibly working with a company that is going to kind of manage the Google ads and such for the website. We're doing an experiment with a bunch of other websites to see if we can drive a little bit of revenue for the website. So check out the bspnmedia.com and you can click on the blog and see all the pieces. We've written pieces on the Giants of late, and we've written some stuff on the 49ers when news has happened. So check that out and let us know what you think. Also, shout out to our guy Davis, who actually substituted for Brad Evans on the Giants, the Thompson to Clark show a month or so ago. Davis, what's up, man? Davis says, everyone wants the payday sooner, and these days management are the ones with the most to lose. Jed is the one with the most to lose, but Jed also has a giant coffer because of his stadium. So I'm not sure. Like, you know, I was reading something, and with the A's leaving the Bay Area, I read that the Giants are going to benefit so much that by being a one-team market in the Bay Area, their revenues on stuff is going to like be sort of like the Yankees in New York, which is mind boggling to me because they sure don't spend like the Yankees. Well, at least not yet, but that may be mm-hmm. in their future. But these teams, even though the owners are always crying that they are losing money or that, you know, year after year, the salaries are going up too much. You know, Mark Davis says this a lot, but maybe he does have some issues, but these owners are sitting pretty for the mere fact that every franchise in the NFL would sell for more than people currently think it's worth because everybody wants in on the game.
Well, I mean, and that's exactly where I'm at. Since 2010, the number is a 400% increase in the value of the franchise. Fuck out of here, Jed. And what are we talking about? Because what happens when this sovereign entity money, I forgot, they can't invest in the NFL, but they can invest in the private equity firms that can invest in the NFL. So when this PFF, this cutter, and Saudi Arabia money starts flowing in, and they offer Jed $2 or $3 billion for that 10%. What is that going to do to the valuation of all of these franchises? So yeah. And again, this is what happened. What's happening now with the growth of the league and what it portends for the value of these franchises. The players don't at this point benefit at all from the growth of the league for the time when they're in it. No more than, okay, when the revenues go up, they see it in the salary cap. But that's something that if I was NFLPA in our next negotiation, that would be what I'd be going after. And I would want a piece of that growth of the league. Mm-hmm. There would be the franchise values. We need to get 0.25% or, a 0.5% of that. And then we can use that, if it was me, to talk about how we can have healthcare after 5 years from retire. Because for me, that's one of the most obscene things ever, is that those dudes 5 years out, Warren Sapp famously said two things happen 5 years out: you're eligible for the Hall of Fame, and they also cut off your insurance. So
Cobra, they send you to Cobra.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that Cobra bill is like. Good luck. I mean, if you're an NFL player, who's trying to give you Cobra? Yeah, so that would be something that I would be trying to fund with that money, is an ability to just to increase the pension and increase the benefits post career. That's a, for me, that'd be a perfect place to look for that, is that valuation money. And I know they're probably not trying to hear that at all, but I'd be trying to get it.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for,
in Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
All right, let's talk about what is going on for Monday. The Niners put out a status report for Monday. And Gross Matos out, knee injury. D. Winters out, knee injury. One guy that I think a lot of people are paying attention to is Hufanga. He is doubtful for the game. So I would imagine he's probably more than 1 week away from playing. And then we got to circle this one. Christian McCaffrey. Calf and Achilles. Now, we know that if you followed the Kevin Durant injury, when he blew out his Achilles tendon, he started with a calf injury. He had a calf injury in the playoffs, comes back for game one of the finals. Some thought maybe he came back too early. Some thought, man, if you want to win this championship, they need you. He comes back game one, shoots a jumper, and he tears his Achilles. So the calf Achilles thing probably scares me more than anybody, because I was watching Kevin Durant shoot that basketball and then come down on his foot, and basically our finals chances kind of went out the window. What do you think about this McCaffrey injury? And it is kind of concerning to me that this is a similar injury that he dealt with in the playoffs last year. And so you go from, you know, the Super Bowls in the first week of February, we're now in September, and this is still, he's still dealing with it. I don't know if it's the exact same thing or exactly what's happening, but it feels like a very similar injury to the one that he was dealing with in the playoffs last year.
That was what, you know, I didn't know what to think. You know, when it's calf, it's like, I don't know if they're just being abundant, there's an abundance of caution happening. And then, you know, you kind of saw it with, I remember it just flashed like this earlier this today when you look, I looked at my fantasy app and the injuries designations from both CeeDee Lamb and Tyreek just kind of went away, that they, you know, they were cleared and full to go, you know, good to go. And that's kind of what I had expected to happen with CMC, is that, you know, they had this injury designation, but then once we got to actually game day, that he would be, you know, thumbs up and clear to go. But, you know, like you said, it not only did, was he not thumbs up to clear to go, we got an additional injury, or, you know, not in, I don't know if it's injury, but something else on the injury report, which, like you say, that Achilles is something we saw it last year with Dre. It's something that's not to be trifled with. And I remember my doctor last year, she's a runner, and we were talking about the Greenlaw injury and how it's not something that you necessarily can you know, him playing on it wasn't, you know, necessarily making it worse, but there was always a potential that, you know, it could be on its way. And mm-hmm. the only way for it to get better is to rest it. Well, he might not be making it worse, but it's damn sure not getting better playing on it. And, you know, that's, you know, I don't want to be the doom guy, because obviously that's the worst case scenario. And hopefully they would, you know, there would be an abundance of caution with CMC prior to that. I mean, you know, I understand how important he is to everything they do, but, you know, if we're talking trying to get him through 17 weeks, I think it, you know, it'd be best to, you know, be careful with him and not push it. So it's going to be interesting and something that bears watching. You know, we'll be talking about this until, you know, he's not on the injury report at all, which when you're on it week one, you know, it's highly unlikely he's going to get healthier as the season goes on. So,
and I was thinking about this because, you know, the fact that the Niners are one of these super teams in the league, and so they're often, even on the national podcasts that aren't just local, they're always talking about the Niners. And one of the things is when you are in the Super Bowl or you're winning the Super Bowl, when these commentators are trying to have an angle or they want a take, a lot of times they don't want to go chalk. They don't want to say Niners Chiefs Super Bowl rematch, because that's boring. How is that interesting for the podcast? And so a lot of the podcasts that I was listening to was like, oh yeah, you know, here are the reasons why the Niners aren't going to be as good. And one of them was that, you know, Christian McCaffrey's already dealing with the calf injury. Calf injuries suck. They stick around for a long time. That can't be good. Calf injuries are usually a little bit more serious than the team is letting on. And I was like, really? Like, I don't hear that from the local media. So I heard Cal Camimberos, and they were talking about the injury. And they said, and this was before the latest injury report came out, they said that they both did not think it was a serious thing. So I don't know if this is a situation of the Niners just being overly transparent on the injury report. Maybe the Jets are like, huh, maybe we'll have to game plan a little bit more for JP. And then all of a sudden, McCaffrey is totally fine. I would guess sort of like you, in that you lean a little bit towards not overusing him. And maybe we do see JP for, I don't know how many snaps. I don't know what the split would be. But this, it would be better for the 49ers if they actually got ahead and they were running the ball, because that's where JP excels more so than in a come from behind passing game, because he is obviously not nearly the same as Christian McCaffrey. And that was a big thing for him in this offseason, was he was talking about getting on that jugs machine and catching all these balls. And, you know, he didn't expect to be the best receiver out of the backfield this year, but he was working on it and working on it. He wants to kind of replicate what CMC does. And he's going to be thrown into the fire very early on if CMC's injury is as serious as it seems like it is on this injury report.
Well, and I think it's like you said, the ideally he is playing mop-up reps as opposed to critical rep. I mean, like, you know, in game, you know, when games are, you know, still at issue, you'd hope that Christian McCaffrey, even if they try to, because I mean, it's interesting to me that we've gotten to a place, and I know the season is longer, but, you know, I didn't think that 20 touches was like, it's not like he was, you know, Ricky Williams or, you know, Derrick Henry in terms of his usage. I mean, it's not nearly as much as you being used as much as he was like in Carolina, as, you know, say. So this notion that, oh, wow, we're burning him out, just kind of, I kind of think that's ridiculous to me. But, you know, you should be able to handle 20 reps, 20 touches. But, you know, if you want to make it, and then, okay, if you say we're going to, you know, lower it, I mean, how much, you know, 12 reps, 12 touches a game, 15? I mean, what is that magic number that preserves him but still makes him, you know, a viable threat? You know, I don't know what that is. And obviously, if you could find out what the balance is, that would be great. But I just have this feeling that, you know, we can talk all this talk, you know, now, but in a game when Kyle is trying to win the game, I just, you know, I don't see him saying JP, you know, and hell, I don't see, that was one of the things that was noticeable to me immediately with CMC when he first got here, is that dude does not like to come off the field. Mm-hmm. He, you know, when they were doing that thing where they were kind of trying to ease him in early on, he'd be over there with his helmet on, you know, just, you could just tell all his body language said, I want to be back in there. Yeah. And so that is something that Kyle is also going to have to deal with, is, you know, his wanting to use him as a weapon, and CMC is not going to make it easier for you to cut his reps. I don't think it just doesn't seem like, you know, he is that type of player. He seems like, you know, if you're going to have to like hide his helmet. If you,
yeah, you have to have a plan for him and let him know what that plan is before the game starts, because, yeah, you know, you kind of got to be on the same page when it comes to that. And he, not that he's going to agree, like you said, he's always going to want to play more than less. But if you don't have a plan and you kind of just go, okay, well, you know, if we get ahead, then we could take him out. This dude, if the game is close, he's going to talk himself back into the lineup no matter what. And why wouldn't he? He's the most valuable offensive player in football, maybe, when it comes to the value to an offense. So that's the scary one. And we'll have to see come Monday's game how much he actually plays. But I guarantee you it will be a talking point if they are playing JP a little bit more. Also on the injury report, Aaron Banks, questionable with a finger injury. The players who were sort of in limited participation in the last practice before the lead up to this game, Banks, Hufanga, and Christian, full participation, Spencer Burford, Money-Making Mitch, Guerrero, Juwan Jennings, and Bethune. So, you know, they're not 100% healthy right out of the gate, but outside of the McCaffrey thing, it does seem like that is about as strong to come out of the gate after all of the crazy offseason discussions. And, you know, I think a lot of a lot of fans were worried, like, oh man, we're gonna have to go into week one. No Ayuk and no Trent. You don't have to worry about that. Now those guys aren't going to be 100% necessarily, but we do not have to worry about that on Monday.
Yeah, that, you know, and that was, I kind of always felt like we'd get it done, but you know, the Trent one was obviously to me because it, you know, his presence just changes everything, the alchemy of everything. So, you know, I figured they would get it done. You know, that's the thing that's so maddening to me, is that we go through all of these machinations every year, but ultimately, you know, as much shit as I give Jed and Parag, they do, you know, get there. But it's like, if you're gonna get there, then why do we have to go through all of the the rigmarole, you know, from the first 5 months, you know, to finally get to the place where we're at? You know, it's just, I don't know, it's frustrating. But I give them credit when the chips were down. You know, the last 4 years, when the chips have gotten down, they have pushed in and done what needed to be done to make it happen. So yeah.
Did you see the Jay Glazer report from this morning?
So bizarre. It's just that, you know, the more, one of those things where the more you hear about it, it's just, you know, again, like I was just saying, you know, it's frustrating to me. Because it's like narrative crafting now. This whole thing is like the narrative is that the deal was on the table, and finally, after 2 weeks, BA took the deal. We're just going to pretend that the previous 5 months didn't happen. That because, you know, there's no way that, because in May, the number was 26.5. That was the final answer. And then we started talking about trades, and then we started talking about all of this other stuff. And then now the narrative is, well, the deal that he ended up taking was on the table all along, and he, you know, he finally took it. Like his holdout and the hold in and the trade talks and the contract talks with the other teams didn't play a part in them getting to where they finally got. It's like they were there all along, and he just came to his senses, which is, again, it's narrative crafting, and that's how they want us to remember it, is that, you know, ultimately they put the offer there, and then he finally came to his senses, which is, you know, for those of us who were there know that that's not how that went. So
yeah,
it's really but I love those looks into the behind the scenes of how things work. And, you know, that is just bananas that we were that close to him being gone.
So you know? just for the people who did not hear the Glazer report, Glazer said that the day that Ayuk signed the deal, he came to the 49ers practice facility. He saw Kyle, and they were in the process of trading him to the Steelers. So Kyle had to call up to the front office and basically say, hey guys, he's here, and we're, you know, let's hold off on this thing. And so basically what they said is, this is according to Glazer, the deal that was on the table, that was going to be the deal, or they were going to trade him to Pittsburgh. So they finally kind of put their foot down with the leverage, and him just coming to the, you know, the headquarters. I don't know if that was great timing or if he was like, okay, this has got to be the day. And then they, you know, he said he would sign the deal, and so they didn't trade him. So it sounds like it was a lot closer than any of us realized. And I'm thankful for the timing. I'm thankful that both parties figured out that this was the right thing to do. But like you said, the leverage aspect of this, the pride aspect of this, is the ultimate fail, because if we could have got this done earlier, then why didn't they get it done earlier? Why couldn't they have said, look, we're going to trade you to the Steelers. We have something on the table. Why couldn't they have said that in early August? Because all of these trade offers were out there for months. And we know that they threatened to trade him to the Pats. And he was like, no, I don't want to go there. So, you know, there was a lot of back and forth stuff, but they got it done. So now the other thing that people are going to watch really closely, how well does he play? Because if he has an off season, everyone's going to blame him for the holdout. Even though we are very fair when it comes to this, there are two sides to the holdout. There's the team side and the player side. So I know that he probably knows that if he underperforms, the fans are going to be bothered more so with him than with the team. So that's something that I think people should keep an eye on, because one thing that Ayuk showed in this whole, I could technically hold in, is that he's in it for the business aspect of it, and he should be. And so not that he doesn't have ties to the organization, not that he doesn't have ties to the 49ers fans, but he's going to put himself in position for the best career choice for him, not necessarily for the team or his employer or whatever. So what I don't want to see is he doesn't play well. There's chirping. There's leaks in the front office about they're unhappy with him. Jay Glazer gets a report that says, you know, I've been told that, you know, 49ers management is unhappy with the way Ayuk is performing. And then it becomes this thing where they're going to trade him anyways because he's unhappy or because the coaches aren't happy. Like, they really need to figure out how to get him off to a strong start and make sure that he is starting out this season good, because you do not want that conversation to be dominating the season storylines as we get deeper into the season, if this team realistically does have a shot to get back to Super Bowl.
Yeah, it does bear watching. Like you say, I don't know if it'll be Glazer or Mike Silver, but, you know, if he does get off to a slow start, you know, the leaks will be prevalent from the management side. So yeah, like you say, it behooves everybody. It's in everybody's best interest to get him off to a good start.
All right. From the Jets side of things, the Jets are one of those dandies when it comes to the predictions, when it comes to the prognosticators about which team is going to be the new contender in the AFC. A lot of people are picking the Jets. The Jets do have a lot of talent. They're going to be without Reddick, it looks like, on Monday. I haven't heard anything today about him all of a sudden signing something. I think if the game is played on Monday and he has not signed a new deal, then his contract is not fully guaranteed. So I don't know if that makes him then report or if that hurts the situation and he holds out longer. I'm not sad for the 49ers that he is not there, but they have a lot of talented players. They are actually they're like 49ers East out there.
Yeah,
they have
a lot
of ex-49er players on their team. Here's the one thing that I have not heard from a lot of the national media about Aaron Rodgers, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this. So Aaron Rodgers last year goes from the Packers to the Jets. He did not even get out of the first game before he got hurt. So there was not any sort of repetitions with the wide receivers, him directing huddles, him being on the sidelines. Jets fans and the Jets team in of itself, they have not really had the Aaron Rodgers experience. Now, when Aaron Rodgers was the dude with the Packers, he was always killing the 49ers. Then when the 49ers got good with those Harbaugh teams, they kind of flipped it around and they were the ones beating Rodgers. And then the recent good teams with the Shanahan teams, not that they ever had Rodgers figured out. You don't ever figure out Rodgers, but the Niners had much more success against Rodgers teams of late than they had when he was just killing us in the mid 2000s and the late 2000s. I haven't heard anybody say that about how this Kyle Shanahan organization has actually played Rodgers pretty well. And so I think they have a good idea about what he is going to bring. Now, Breece Hall, they got Garrett Wilson. I know they brought in Mike Williams. So there is some firepower there offensively. They also have a lot of changes on the offensive line. So I don't want to put pour water on any of Jets fan hype. I just kind of wonder if it's going to take them a little bit longer to get adjusted and have that chemistry and have that offense humming with Rodgers, because he just didn't play. And then you're playing a team Monday night in San Francisco who knows him very well. What are your thoughts on the expectation that, you know, for Rodgers from your perspective?
I think that I believe like you do that those, you know, expectations for him should be tempered. It's been, you know, he's just older, and I'm not one who thinks that the wheels are just going to fall off Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if he'll be back-to-back MVP Aaron Rodgers, but he's not going to be a league average quarterback. No, I mean, he just knows how to play. I mean, he's a great player. I think it's just, they're going to always be, they'll be inextricably linked. But I think back to like Minnesota Brett Favre. Was he Brett Favre, MVP Brett Favre? No, but he was still really, really good. I mean, because he knew the West Coast offense better than anybody, and he could put people in positions, and he still, you know, had more talent than, you know, 75% of the players in the league. And Rodgers is the same way. He is just, you know, if you spent any time last offseason watching the Hard Knocks thing, and and I know it's just throwing into baskets or nets, but to watch that dude, just the way he was like, it was like layup, 70 yards, 60 yards downfield, you know, putting it in these nets. Just, they were like layups. It was amazing to watch. He is just a phenomenal, you know, his skill level is just, he's a Hall of Famer. He is literally in the conversation of one, in my opinion, you know, one of the top five quarterbacks all time. I mean, he just is. So even as those guys diminish, they're at a different level than anybody else. And you take away the fact that the Jets offense, you know, Garrett Wilson was good with, you know, Mike White and whoever else. He is just a
Zach
good
Wilson.
Yeah. Breece Hall is just a good player. They are a talented football team. But what I really think this whole thing is going to come down to is the defenses. They are, even without Hassan Reddick was an addition piece, they were really good last year, and they will be really good this year. So they're going to, I think their defense will, we're going to have our hands full with Saleh in his defense. And I think conversely, they're going to have their hands full with our defense. So while Brock and Aaron will, you know, are, you know, headlining the marquee, because that's what quarterbacks do, I think the defenses are going to have, I think Warner and Sauce are going to have a lot more to do with how this game goes than even the quarterbacks do. That's just how I see it. But, you know, so, you know, I think to that end, what you're talking about with the Kyle defenses, you know, kind of having Rodgers' number, I think that's going to be, it's something that's going to bear watching. Is he able to break that jinx and figure us out, or is it going to be more of the same? And we are, you know, kind of giving him the blues. So yeah, that's,
In the regular season, Rodgers is 3-1 against Kyle Shanahan, but in the playoffs, he is 0-2 against Kyle Shanahan teams. So still success. There was a game in 2018 when the Niners weren't necessarily the Niners yet that he won. It was a close one. I think that game might have also been on Monday night. Might have been like a season, you know, very early in the season game, if I remember. But, you know, to be 50-50 with Aaron Rodgers is actually really good, because Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. So I'm just the thing, if you're on the Niners end and you want to feel anxious about the game, yeah, the offseason was loud, man. Like, you know, when you get to the Super Bowl and you get that close to winning, your hope is that it's like, okay, everyone's going to get back together. Everyone's going to work hard. We have this one goal. But then you have the Armstead situation, which I'm sure ticked off a lot of the old OGs. And then you have the Ayuk, and then you have Trent, and then you have CMC. You have the Pearsall situation, which was out of their control. That was just a random occurrence. So it's just, they had a very loud offseason. And when your goal is to kind of just get back in like a workmanlike fashion, you kind of want the silent offseason. You want everything to be under control. And that wasn't it. So that is really my anxiety, is really, do we understand what the team chemistry is right now? Do we understand how on the same page everyone is with all of the contract scenarios and this impending Brock contract, which is going to blow everything out of the water? That is what we are going to see on Monday. And if Shanahan now Shanahan's a veteran coach and he's a successful coach. If he's got his guys going, they should win this football game. But that is the thing to be anxious about if you're a Niner fan. Just this offseason was not the way that you wanted to see how things were handled.
I mean, and that's the thing that I know Niners fans, because I've talked to them, they just don't want to hear, is that's been my concern, is that the record ain't great for teams that lose the Super Bowl. You know, in the following season, it's hard to get back, especially when you get that close. You know, it's one thing when you get there and you win it, you know, there's a whole set of problems that come with that. But then there's a whole other set of problems that when you get that close and you realize you're that close, but you don't get there. And now it's just like, you got to climb all the way. You got to make that same climb again. And you would hope that there is an energy and a galvanization that comes together. And like, you're just all moving in the same direction from day one towards that. But we didn't have that. So, mm-hmm. You know, do we need it? I hope we don't, because we didn't get it, but maybe we don't. And now, you know, all of the distractions, you know, somehow galvanize those guys behind the scenes. I don't, you know, like you said, we don't know. So I think, you know, week one, again, I talked before we even got on air about the overreactions. It, you know, I don't know that it matters a whole hell of a lot one way or the other, you know, either way, what happens tomorrow. But, you know, from a narrative standpoint, it will. If we go out there and we lay an egg, it's going to be C. All of the distractions, you know, are the reasons that we didn't play well. So hopefully we can go out here and be strong, get this W in a impressive fashion, so that maybe we can go ahead and put the offseason away. I think that is probably Pollyannish of me, because the moment that we hit a skid, which in a 17 game season or 18 week season is going to happen. We had one last year, you know, mm-hmm. where we lost, I mean, 2 out of 3, and it looked real funky. So it's going to happen. And I'm sure all this stuff will bubble up back to the top again when it does. But I am hoping for a strong out of the gate start, and then maybe we can, you know, kind of put it back, you know, put that on the back burner. But like you say, those narratives are going to, you know, I think the huge specter for us this season is going to be that Brock contract. I don't see how it's not. If he is playing well, it's going to be a story. If he's not playing well, it's going to be a story. You know, that's what's going to be interesting to see, is how he handles this impending windfall. Because I'm someone who believes it's going to happen regardless. I don't give a damn how he plays at this point. They got to pay him. So, but if he is not at the same level that he has been the past two seasons, it's going to be an issue. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair. He's a young player. And to think for anybody, that's what I've been saying all along, is that for everybody to kind of just think he's just going to be on this incline of ascension and there's never going to be any valleys to his growth and development is ridiculous. It's going to happen. So if it happens this year in a contract year, it's not ideal, but if you're riding with him, you got to just ride with him and, you know, hope that, you know, that it's gonna, he's a player, dog. He can play. So if he's struggling, it's just the struggles of a young player. Everybody has them. So, but I'm not naive enough to think it's not going to be a story, because it is.
It will be. Steven Ruiz is going to get weeks and weeks and weeks of quarterback rankings stuff about Brock.
And Cowherd and Nick Wright. I mean, it's going to be a mess. But yeah. I hope he plays well. I really hope he plays well.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
All right, what over-unders did you have? And if, Shelvin, if you want to play in the comments, we'll read yours as well.
Well, I've been getting all kinds of grief for the fact that my single biggest bet of the offseason was under 12 and a half. I just thought that number was ridiculous. You know,
that number is high.
13 and 4 is... I mean, because you can have a legitimately great season at 12 and 5, but you won't hit the over. So I took that number like right after the Super Bowl, because I just, you know, and I had, with no knowledge of the tumult that was coming, it just seemed ridiculously high to me.
Is that what it still is right now?
It's 11 and a half now.
Okay.
Which is still, I mean, I would still
take the under.
Yeah, it just, you know, and then be happy if they go over, because your team won 12 games. But from a financial standpoint, that was just too much. A couple of my others, that was really the only team prop I had. The other kind of big ones were, I took Debo. I took him over the receiving yards of 100. His 800 receiving yards was low. I think he's gonna have a really good season.
So if Debo plays 16 games, he only's got to average 50 yards receiving. So that sounds very doable. So I'm with you on the over. I'm trying to think if I guess the reason for the low number is just for the mere factor of injury. Like, they're just betting he's going
to
miss four games or something like that, right?
Yep, it has to be. I took the only other one. I was toying with the Kittle receiving touchdowns, but I didn't end up taking that one. It's 5.5. I was on the lower. I was thinking he's not going to get that many, but he is just so, you know, he is so touchdown dependent as a fantasy player. Like, 2 years ago, he had 10 of them, which was, you know, he ended up being like a top three tight end with like you know, 60 receptions, but he had like 10 touchdowns. So I don't know, if 5.5. I didn't love that, but I didn't end up betting it. The only other one I took was CMC rushing touchdowns higher than 10.5. I like that number. Those are my three props. What do you think about that one? Rushing touchdowns.
Woo, that's a good one. And especially just on the, pun intended, heels of the Achilles heel injury.
That's so bad.
That is a tough one, because, you know, we have watched him now for a few years and he's been great. Like, I think the rep a little bit was he's injury prone, and we've just seen him play all the time. So if we go by that, if we go by the fact that he's going to play 15, 16 games, 10.5 should be money, because he just finds the end zone. He just has a nose for the end zone.
And but you figure, my thought was, you know, and you can probably pencil in at least 1, 2, or 3 touchdown game.
Yes.
Which, you know, get you there.
That's also there. Why I think I would have Kittle at over, because Kittle's going to have a game. He'll go like 3 or 4 games without a touchdown, and then Brock's going to find him 2 or 3 times in one game, because that's just how streaky Kittle can be sometimes. I'm with you. I understand. So just to go back to some of the other, I understand the Debo number. I think that Debo number is smart. We're banking on the idea that Debo is going to have a ball out season, because it just seems that way. So I'm going over Kittle. I'm going over on the receiving touchdowns for Kittle too. The CMC one has me on pause because of injury, but I still think, let's say you get 13 or 14 games out of CMC. Let's give him 3 games off. He's probably still getting really close to that number off of 13 games.
He could easily do a touchdown a game. And then when you factor in, you know, 1 or 2 multiple touchdown games. I'm a believer in this offense. I'm a believer in Brock. The only question is the offensive line. And, you know, everybody, I didn't see any of it. I didn't go to training camp. Everybody seems to believe in Pooney. I'm still not sure if that's how you pronounce his name. I've never heard anybody else say it. I've only read it. So I don't know. I'll see on the game tomorrow. I guess that shows you how much I watched preseason.
Yeah.
I don't. But if he's as good as advertised, you know, obviously the Banks injury is kind of, you know, you're it's just a finger, but your hands are kind of important as an offensive lineman. So, I think we're going to go as they go. If we can get a solid season out of those guys, I'm sure we're going to have another season of George playing, you know, auxiliary right tackle over there helping McKivitz. You know, it was funny to watch during the Ravens game to hear Ravens fans online complaining about all the blocking that Mark Andrews was having to do. I was like, yeah, you welcome to the club.
Yeah.
Because when your offensive line is struggling, that's like the first move is just to put your tight end out there to help. So I imagine we'll see a lot of that with Kittle this year over there with McKivitz. It's going to be, if we can get it blocked, I have full faith and confidence in Kyle and Brock running the offense. If we can just keep that dude upright and not, I just don't want Brock taking a whole bunch of hits you know, this whole thing falls apart. If he's hurt, it's just, you know, I don't think we can make it to New Orleans with any of those other guys. I just
looked up some of Brock's historical numbers from a rushing touchdown perspective. His best season for rushing touchdowns was 2019 with Carolina. 16 games, 15 rushing touchdowns. He was a fantasy beast that year. So when he came to the Niners, He was six rushing touchdowns in 10 games in 2022. And then last year, 14 rushing touchdowns in 16 games. So, yeah, you know, I can sort of see why that number is as low as it is, or at least as we think it's as low as it is. Any running back who scores 10 to 11 touchdowns is having a banner year. So I get it. And I guess if I had to bet it, I would probably either stay away or bet the under. But if you are of the idea that he is going to play 15 games, then he's going to go, more than likely going to go over that number. So it's really what you think as far as his health is concerned. But I'll give you my official bets. If I was doing it now, that I am not, I would be under 11 and a half wins. I think Shelvin also said he's at 11. So he would be under. I would have Debo over 800. I would have Kittle over 5.5, and I would have CMC under 10.5.
And I lied. I have one more. I think Brock goes way over 3,900 passing yards. I think that number is stupid low.
I think I would go over that as well. And I wonder how much of that number was based on Ayuk possibly not being on the team.
Yeah, that might have a lot to do with it. But yeah, that number, I can't see him being under 4,000 yards. If he's injuries aside, which is always the caveat, I think he blows past 3,900 yards passing.
He had 4,280 last year, and he sat out one game. So.
Yeah, I could say so. Maybe that number, that under, and that was on Underdog where I got that number. So maybe that was, and again, that was prior to, you know, BA signing, and maybe they're factoring the number was factoring in. Maybe it wasn't looking good there for a while. But yeah, I thought that was stealing.
I would actually go over. I would actually be more confident on the Brock 3,900 passing yards, probably over all of them except Debo. For what some reason, I just think Debo's going to have a giant year this year.
I do too.
But hey, we're also homers, so that influences our decisions. But yep, okay. So let's get to it. What is your temperature gauge on not only how the Niners are going to do, but also what some of the other teams who are hunting for their spots are going to do? And now you have the benefit of seeing the majority of the teams, except right now, as we're recording, Rams and Lions are playing. So that's two good teams who we'll have to wait and see. But do you expect, and I'll ask you flat out, do you expect the Niners to get back to the Super Bowl?
I expect them to get to the NFC Championship. And then I'm looking at a rematch of last year. I'm looking forward to watching and seeing what Detroit is, but I think they are really, you know, and honestly, I think the Rams are going to be sneaky good this year.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get there that the Niners don't win their division. As impressed as I am, and probably overly impressed as I am with the Rams, I don't see them being able to dethrone us. So I think the NFC Championship is kind of a given, or not, you know, a given. I think they win that. I think that Detroit is a legitimately good team, and I'm having a hard time with that. I'm not ready to say that we go back to the Super Bowl just yet. How about
the Lions? The Lions are an awesome team to root for because they haven't been bad for so long. They're always the underdog. If anybody watched Beverly Hills Cop 4, Axel Foley, he's still rocking the Lions jacket. even though the movie starts,
he was rocking the giant Lions jacket before it was cool to love.
Yeah, exactly. Lions fan. The movie starts and they're at a Red Wings game, and I'm like, really? I would have tried to figure out how to replicate being at a Lions game instead of a Red Wings game. But if I'm an outsider looking in, I know I have a lot of Lions fans who are very hopeful, but they are also ready for the rug to get pulled from under them, because that's kind of how they feel. If I was on that side, my main worry would be if Jared Goff is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. That would be my biggest worry. Can he be that guy? And if he can't, I think you have to figure that out sooner than later, because this team is very talented, and their window, as we've seen with the 49ers, the Niners have actually had two windows in the last 12 or 13 years. And a lot of teams don't have that, you know, the Patriots obviously had a large one. And right now we're seeing that with the Chiefs. For the teams that have not won the Super Bowl, the Niners are right there as far as windows.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, we feel that we're maybe towards the end of that window, and we really feel the urgency to win one now. That window can close on you very fast. So if I was a Lions fan, I would just be studying Jared Goff's season very closely and just figuring out, is he the guy or is he not the guy? Because with the way that the market is these days, I don't know what Jared Goff's deal is as far as what they have to pay him, but man, you know, there's a handful of QBs out there that might be able to get you one if he's not the guy. And I would think about moving on quickly with the team that they have. But maybe you can't afford to. Maybe you're so invested that you just can't do it. But that would be my main thing. So I am less scared about the Lions and the Packers unless Jordan Love takes that leap. And we watched Philly and Green Bay. That dude is talented. That dude has got a crazy arm, and he still makes young QB mistakes with the football. Jalen Hurts, I am petrified when they run the read option, but when he goes back to pass, I am less petrified. So I look at it in that aspect of which quarterbacks scare me the most. And it's probably Stafford if you cannot get to him. Yeah. If you can get to Stafford, there's going to be problems for Stafford. But if he has a pocket, that's the quarterback that I'm most afraid of, I think,
in
the NFC.
That dude can spin it. He is amazing to be like 40 years old. He is so good. He is, again, like you say, if you give him time, he will carve your ass up. It's just not, and you know, and he's got, you know, they, where'd they find Puka? I mean, and then yeah. Cooper Kupp is supposed to be back, which I think his demise has been greatly
exaggerated.
over-exaggerated. He has killed us. He is so one of those dudes that for me, peak Russ was, you know, he was just so frustrating. You do everything right, and then that
dude
would play and break your back. For Cooper Kupp, same way. I mean, you think you know, we got this dude, but no, you don't.
It's Kyler Murray who also gives the Niners trouble just because he's so fleet footed. But other than that, like, I'm not overlooking the Cowboys, but I don't that, like, you just have a feeling as a 49ers fan that Dak is gonna throw us one, or maybe throw us two, or maybe fumble, or maybe, you know, try and run, you know, the late in the clock and slide and not have any time left on the clock. Like that's how I feel. Like, I'm not scared of Dak. I'm not scared of Jared Goff. Jordan Love is, we'll see. He's on the cusp. He may be a killer for us because of the, what we saw last year. And if he makes that leap, but the teams I'm scared of are in the other side, really.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
absolutely fearful of the Chiefs. The Ravens play a style of football where they kind of punch us in the mouth, and it's almost like, man, when are we going to out tough those guys?
They're kind of like us.
We'll see with the Jets, right? They have an opportunity. Like, I think the Jets, I'm more fearful of what the Jets bring to the table than, say, what the Dallas Cowboys bring to the table. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to beat the Cowboys this season to get to where we want.
I think that's what it is with the Jets is, you know, it's the 49er DNA is that they play a style that is, you know, it's not like it was made to play against us, but that solid defense is formidable. It is. I don't know. Again, there's still the jury is still out on him as a head coach, but I don't think as a defensive coach, I don't think there's any question anymore that he's one of the best defensive coaches in the league. And
talking about Salah,
yeah, and Sauce is one of the best defensive backs I've ever seen. He is so good. He's really, and he talks it. And I know people don't like that, but I do. I love, I'm not comparing him to Deion by any means. There's only one Deion, but I like that type of player. It's one that, you know, because when he goes out there and he talks, he's putting a bullet on his back because, you know, he's out there all by himself. And
You better call Deion Coach Prime, by the way.
He may find
a way to not show Colorado games on your television.
Yeah, you don't call him Nick. You call him Coach Saban. So you call him. Okay, I got you. Yeah. I'm excited to see us. You know, on the one hand, I was kind of pissed that we were the last game, but now that we're here. Tomorrow can't come fast enough. It is just, I'm gonna be rushing through my day trying to get home to my couch. I know we're about to end. What is your dining? Are you gonna do anything like special, like wings or anything tomorrow for the game? Or
so probably not. The way that we do it at my house is, you know, my wife is very good about dinner table, TV's off, kids, how is your day? What's going on? Let's check in. Except in playoffs or when football is on, I'll just come into my office and I'll eat dinner by myself in my office, and then she can still man the dinner table conversation. So as far as the choices that I will make, you know, I'm so diligent with my diet these days. As I get older, I'm almost too diligent in that I don't allow myself to have enough of these, you know, cheat days mm-hmm. or whatever. So I'll eat a normal dinner. But what I might do, and we'll see how this goes for our podcast, is I might have a drink or two while I'm watching the game, just to kind of chill the nerves a little bit. And sometimes I feel a little bit more creative with things as I'm writing notes down. If I have a glass of wine, or if I have a glass of scotch or something. So that'll be my treat, is just to maybe have, you know, some bourbon or something while I'm watching the game.
I'm doing, and I too am being a lot cleaner than I used to be, but Hawaiian barbecue fits into my diet regimen. So I'm going to have the Hawaiian barbecue.
You're talking like L&L?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. I'll have the beef and chicken with mm-hmm. the extra cabbage.
See, that's rice. You know, that's mm-hmm. that's fine. Like, that's you're mm-hmm. not see where I get killed on L&L, and why I don't go to L&L anymore is because I grew up in an Asian household, mm-hmm. so we ate rice with everything.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what I avoid a lot mm-hmm. of times in my diet is rice. Mm-hmm. But also at L&L, the thing that I like the most is their macaroni salad.
Yes,
sir. So if I'm just like L&L, then I'm like killing myself. But it's delicious and it's awesome. Yeah.
Every fourth time I'll get a mac salad. Otherwise, I do the bowl with just the cabbage and the meat.
That's the way that's a very smart way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I didn't even tell you about is every game this year, we are going to have a player of the game, and you are going to name the player of the game, and we'll create a little graphic for the Rod player of the game on our Instagram account.
Okay.
So the BSPN_media Instagram account, we'll have like, cause so for Brad and I, for Thompson to Clark, we have a player of the week. And so I create a graphic for that. But for this one, we'll do the player of the game, and then you'll pick it. And we'll do that for every game. So be ready. So you gotta have your guys ready. Yep. All right. So feel pretty good. Are we predicting a Niner victory? I had to write down a score for my pick'ems, and I had us 27-20. But this game could very well be nip and tuck. And I'm not saying I would be crazy surprised if the Jets won, because we just talked about how good they are. I would be really disappointed if the Niners came out and laid an egg on week one, though.
Yeah, I think we win. I don't have a score in mind, because I think the defenses are going to dictate what happens. But even in today's NFL, a defensive struggle can be 24-20. I mean, so it's not like, you know, points just there's just a lot more mm-hmm. than there used to be. So so I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know that I think either of these defenses will completely shut down the other offense, but I think that it's gonna be defensive plays that decide who wins it, the turnover or sacks, those type of things. So we'll see. I'm looking for my guy. You're talking about players of the game. I'm looking for big games from Nick and Fred, which you can pretty much, if those who have watched before, those dudes are, for player game, those are, I almost got to a point at one point where I had to eliminate Nick from consideration, just to give everybody else an opportunity.
Imagine if you were an offensive coordinator and you are trying to devise your game plan, and you have to circle those two guys every time you play the Niners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really do. You really do. So yeah, I'm hoping for a solid victory and a really good performance, more so than anything else. Because wins and losses that can be those can be kind of fluky. I want them to play well. I don't want it to be like a sloppy.
Yeah.
Undisciplined.
You don't want to see a Will Levis falling down, throwing interceptions kind of game.
Oh. Yeah, that was awful. That was awful. Yeah.
That might be one of the worst plays I've seen from a quarterback in quite some time.
Yeah.
So Shelvin says that he has some time off coming, and in order to get the time off, he actually has to work tomorrow night. So Shelvin, you may have to watch it on your phone, but we'll be in the Discord chatting too. So people who are in our Discord, if you're not in our Discord, every YouTube video that we post, every podcast that we post, the invite in there should work if you want to join the Discord. If it doesn't work, you can reach out to me, gg@bspnmedia.com, and I'll shoot you over a link to the Discord. Robert Ramos and Rod and possibly Davis and Shelvin and Rick we'll all be chatting about the game. So come join us. And all right, we are done with our preview and the preview to week one. We will be essentially a post-game show from here on out. There may be some weeks, especially during the bye, where Rod and I get together. Otherwise, we're mostly a post-game show. So we'll be up after all of the games this season. So for Rod, I am Double G. We will see you Monday night after Niners-Jets. Peace out.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.